Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Pony Development Sync for November 29th, the year 2022. I'm your host, Joe McElvain. If those others on the call want to say their names so that people listening along to the recording can associate a name to the voice, now is a good time for that.
Hi, I'm Sean Allen.
And I'm Gord Tischer.
Great. So let's take a look at our auto-generated agenda for today. We have RFC tickets. These are tickets rather than pull requests. So these are kind of requests for RFC. We have issue ticket 204 in the RFC's repo. Improve range and reverse. So this is related to some discussions we've had in the previous sync call, as well as in the comments of pull request 201 about introducing empty ranges as an RFC. And yeah, there's some differences between range and reverse and how they work. You'd kind of expect maybe intuitively that reverse is the opposite of range or behaves the opposite in every way, but it's not really true. There's some different important differences there. And the question is, how can we make that more consistent or at least more readily apparent to the user? And so, yes, this is a request for somebody. Perhaps you, listener, working on coming up with a design for those two that have has more consistency, less surprise, that sort of thing. Anything we want to add to that, Sean, Gordon?
I don't think so.
Okay. Well, in that case, you've removed the discuss during sync label. Let's look at the next one, 205. In the RFC's repo. sorry about that. Sorry about the cough. So Sean, do you want to give an intro to this?
Sure. Somebody who I assume is new to using Pony opened an issue on the Pony C repo 4258, which I closed and opened this RFC one instead, which is that basically currently there's no way with the standard stream implementation to get back whether there's an error or not when you tried to write something. There was a blog post, it was a while ago. Anyway, it was bugs in Hello World programs. And one of the ones that's pointed out is that you could take a Hello World and pipe the output to dev full. And many, many, many languages or many implementations that people do, the error code will come back as zero as though this program had succeeded, when piping something to dev full actually returns an error to the program for printing. So the correct thing to do should be to change the error code such that, you know, it indicates the program did not succeed. There is no way currently to do that using the standard stream API in Pony. So that was what was in the particular person's issue that they opened on the Pony C repo. I added on to this with three basic things that could be done for ways to go about designing the ability for standard stream and to be able to give back information about whether there was success or not, and also discussed how this should probably be considered for other parts of the standard library as well, so where we want it to work elsewhere. And I raised amongst those, I detailed why I don't think two of the three possibilities are a good fit, and what I think would be a good fit, and then a number of issues that would have to be worked out in an RFC for actually implementing something based on that general pattern.
Right. Makes sense. Yeah, I would agree with you that a way of printing that cares about errors would be kind of in order. I would tend to maybe make a new method, but yeah, it's up for debate in the RFC. So if anyone wants to work on this, this ticket that Sean has written up makes a great starting point for what to think about. But yeah, I would agree, I think, with what you've written here, Sean.
I will add a note to that. Discuss this during sync. Sure. Any comment, Gordon, for me to add for you from the year ticket?
No, I think. Yeah, I think I think it's straightforward. I'm wondering if we might want to have a, in the case of like env.out, might there be a way of like adding a hook or something to a stream after it's created, or
if it's the callback via explicit receiver, then that's not a problem, because it's the receiver for it is part of the call at the time that you make it.
Right.
There's no initialization issue there.
Yeah, I think what Gordon's hinting at perhaps is that there's actually maybe a fourth pattern apart from the three you mentioned here. And the fourth pattern would be to, the notifier limitations you mentioned was that you set it up usually when the actor is created and there's only one per actor. Mm-hmm. But if we had a variant of that, maybe called something else, wherein you're attaching basically an ability to attach or detach any number of notify-like objects at runtime. Right. And
I think all of them
would be pinged basically when you had those coming out. It's kind of not a great one if you have multiple, but yeah.
I don't see how that is a. I mean, I didn't even consider that worthy writing up. I'm being serious there. I mean, like, I want to get notified for an error, and in the case of something like this, you could have a single notifier which could then do some level of dispatching where you implement knowledge of it. But that doesn't seem particularly good. Leaving aside the how you initialize it for a standard stream, right? But the other is, oh well, you could have multiple notifies, but then it's like, well, it's going to send messages to every single thing, and some of them might not be interested in that one. I just didn't consider that to be reasonable at all. But I mean, it could be added if somebody wants to go ahead and add that as a possibility.
Yeah. I think in general it could be very messy. I'm just wondering if it's worth enough just for the case of env.out.
I don't see any value in it. We want to use the notifier pattern. Here's a way that the notifier can be you could so in general when we implement notifier patterns, there's usually a way to change the notifier. So that issue could be taken care of with the notifier one, but you can still really usually only have a single notifier, right? And you're changing it. And if you have multiple things that are making asynchronous calls to it, you don't even know that the notifier that you've set would be the one that's used. So you have to have multiple, you'd have to have a list at that point of notifiers to send to, and then I'm being sent whether something succeeded or not. And then it would have to be, I guess it would have to send back the explicit string. And so I would have to be having something where the notifier knows for explicit. I don't know any way that this could reasonably work where instead, where how this would be in any way better than having an explicit receiver for a given call.
Yeah, I'm also not sure that it's better.
I'm not even saying I'm not sure it's better. I think it is certifiably worst in every way. I don't think it's reasonable. It'd be like if we did this for a TCP connection, it would be the same thing. You have three different actors who've sent something to a TCP connection. They want to know whether it succeeded or not. They don't care whether somebody else's one succeeded. And having a string of notifiers, all of which gets told, just seems incorrect.
I mean, the way in which it seems perhaps better to have some kind of notifier rather than having it explicitly attached to every call would be if you wanted to globally in your application say, hey, if I ever fail to write to standard out or standard error, then I want this to happen in my application. And that concern should not have to be present at all of the call sites where I'm printing things. And what I'd probably have to end up doing in order to prevent it from being present in all those call sites would be to create like a standard, create a logger class that wraps, logger actor that wraps the calls to print so that I don't need to worry about passing the errors to a parameter every time doing a print.
I mean, yes, I think that if you wanted something where for any occasion for this, then an adapter pattern is the correct thing to do. You could have an adapter. For that case, I would say that you still want to have the actual error mechanism be an explicit receiver. But in this case, instead of using standard, instance, you would instead of passing, the standard out one, you would pass something which is going to, delegate to the standard out and will receive errors itself. And you pass that around as the single instance of standard error or standard out in the same way that you would pass around standard error or standard out instead. And then you could have that always on, always this for everything type scenario.
Yes, I think that works as long as the libraries that you're calling, let's see, standard stream is already an interface, right?
Standard stream is an interface. Yes.
Okay. So any library that needs to, that expects to receive a standard out or standard error, they'd be taking.
Actually, let me check that just to make sure.
No, standard stream is concrete. Sorry, it's okay. Concrete.
Right.
So any library that needs to accept, like either a real standard stream or your adapter to a standard stream, would need to be using that outstream interface.
Yeah, it should be taking like outstream or. But nothing should ever be taking standard stream anyway. Not really. It's not particularly useful if it does.
Except for possibly for avoiding virtual calls, but yeah.
No. I mean, literally like anything where it's like, oh, standard stream. What if I want to write this to a file? Everything should be reasonably be taking a outstream.
Yeah.
It should.
Yeah. So I think, like that would be the pattern to use, assuming that we have the explicit, per call site version of that. And then, you just need to make sure that any libraries you're using are taking outstream instead of standard stream.
Can we add a note to this issue to that effect?
To what effect?
I can write it.
That if you want that kind of pattern, then you need to use an adapter.
I don't. What does it have to do with an RFC?
Well, it quells a potential, like, so pointing out this pattern as an option quells a potential concern or pushback on the explicit receiver approach.
Okay. I think it's okay. Yeah, sure. I mean, to me that's an obvious thing. But yeah, if you think it's valuable to be there. Yep.
Sean, do you want to take us on to the next pull request in Pony C while I'm typing this up? Maybe start introducing the 1118 fix 4256 yep. while I'm typing this up.
So this is a draft PR to fix issue 1118. Issue 1118 has been open for a very long time, and we've discussed it at more than one sync recently. 1118 is basically that there's a optimization in the Orca protocol that says that if you're sending a immutable object from actor A to actor B, you do not have to trace for garbage collection purposes this immutable object because it is immutable. And you don't actually need to know the counts of everything underneath. All that's important for making sure that things aren't freed is increasing the reference count of the immutable object itself that's being written. And this is completely true, except for one problem, which is that we have to know the correct reference count of actors. And that if we don't, that we can have a kaboom based on implementation of stuff in the runtime. And by having this in place, this optimization in place, we have bugs like 1118, where sending an actor a reference to itself when the reference is being held by an immutable object can result in a crash because the actor's reference count will be incorrect. This PR would fix that by introducing a concept on each type for whether the type might contain an actor reference. And then the only four types which are cannot contain a actor reference, would this optimization of not doing the trace on send be applied. The PR as it stands right now introduces the mechanisms to do all of this, except that it defaults everything currently to saying that it might contain a reference, actor reference, such that we would be able to go in and start implementing logic in order to set particular things to say, yes, this will not contain a reference to an actor, but for anything which is not like basically a number, this is going to be set. I did some initial performance testing on this where I took the message UBench application and switched what he was sending around to all of its actors from an I64 to a string. And there was about a 1/3 drop in performance. Basically, that would be with this in place when sending strings, where previously it could send 3 strings during a unit of time, it can now send 2 strings during a unit of time. This is a fairly decent drop in terms of performance. So we should discuss whether we want to merge this bug fix as is without doing any of the incrementing of getting some level of things in where at least some types or some subset of types based on what we add for logic to the compiler has this flag correctly set or not. Additionally, in something that surprises both me and Sylvan, when running any pony program which I've run with this versus without this change, I see consistently higher memory usage, not huge memory usage higher, but definitely consistently higher memory usage for every program with this change set in place, but not in a way where it looks like we're leaking memory.
Does the, just on that last note, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does the garbage collector, I don't know much about the garbage collector at this level anyway. Does the garbage collector have like some kind of deadline where it'll stop collecting things if it's failed to if its timer runs out, or if it runs out of time to keep going, it will abort. So it does not have to spend too much time in garbage collection, or will it just do whatever tracing it needs to do all the way till it's done?
It will do all the marking, and then there also is a sweep.
Okay.
But there is no time limit on it. But
that's
I mean,
the only thing that would make me think that it could be affecting the memory usage.
So with this change, U-Bench, where it's sending you I-64s between everything, I see an increase in the resident memory used. Now, there are a few messages which are not just an I-64, but I am seeing increased memory usage even in that case.
That sounds super strange.
It is strange. I have no idea why that would be happening. I have no intuition as to why it might be happening. Sylvan has no intuition as to why it might be happening. That said, and there is the drop in performance, there is no drop in performance with there is no noticeable change in performance that isn't purely random statistical noise when running message U-Bench with the I-64s. With the string one, there is that one-third drop, right, in throughput. I have nothing to explain the change in memory whatsoever. And I see, and I have no indicators that there is something wrong, that I did wrong because of this. This could very well be an emergent property of a bunch of other things, but I wouldn't be able to explain it beyond that. It could be something else as well. I don't know.
If we held off on merging this change, do you think you would be able to come to more insights as to the memory insight, or you're kind of at a dead end? You've investigated every possible thing you can think of.
So I've investigated everything I can think of. That doesn't mean that if I didn't spend time not really thinking about it, that something wouldn't pop into my head.
Right.
I would be willing to say, you know what? It increases the memory usage. I see absolutely nothing that says that, that there's a memory leak here, like, because it stabilizes. It just stabilizes at a higher level, right?
Right.
Like one program that was previously stabilizing at a resident of 30 used was stabilizing at 45. Another that was stabilizing without this at like 50 was stabilizing at 58. It was not like a set percentage amount that it was increasing, right? It varied from program to program, and it varied as you know, the memory stabilizations tend to do, based on one specific run to another, right? I thought that perhaps I had missed a thing. So one of the things that happens is that there's stuff for the immutable stuff where it will just it will pick a number to say this is how much the heap of this particular actor should be increased by, where we're not tracing it, so we don't know exactly how much additional it's holding, you know, it's supposed to be holding, but we will increase the amount because we're not tracing it by X, which can cause then for additional memory allocations to happen where they wouldn't otherwise, right? More quickly. So I thought perhaps I had missed something around this. And I had gotten something wrong, but that was, I did not find that to be the case. And at that point, I don't know, but certainly, certainly there is variation within the memory usage of a regular Pony program without this. And that basically comes down to timing of when memory is being freed and when memory is being requested. And that in general, it's, oh, look, a chunk on, you know, we requested 15 chunks on this particular run based on timing. And in this other run, we requested 25 chunks, right? Just because of when GCing happened to happen based on timings. And it could be that.
Right. That is, yeah. Like if we're allocating extra pages from the OS because we haven't GC'd enough memory yet, and then we'll stabilize at a higher number of pages.
Yes. And that is a completely unsatisfactory answer because I have no way to prove that, but that is my until I have something else, that is my operating thought based on what I'm seeing.
That makes sense to me.
But I mean, it's an explanation to me, but I'm not really comfortable with it, but it's the only thing I have right now to explain it. And that is so hard to prove that I would never feel comfortable with it, even if we never find anything else. But it would be my operating idea. If somebody wanted to look into it, I would say, this is my belief. You should not actually assume that my belief is true, and you should start from scratch with trying to come up with other hypotheses and trying to prove or disprove those, right? I came up with, like, certainly I could find nothing to show that I had a memory leak. I couldn't, et cetera. I came up with a number of ideas and I wasn't able to prove any of them.
Okay. So about the performance of things like strings, other simple things that are currently the things that seem fairly obvious to not contain an actor, but we're currently marking as might contain an actor.
Right. I don't know though. Is there a way to other than hard coding some values for known classes in the standard library, right? I don't know of a way to do this easily that doesn't pretty much do most of the logic that we'd need, because like for string has a field that's an array, and the array and the, but it's limited to be, but it's an array U8, right? Uh-huh. So isn't that like a big chunk of the logic we already need right there to like clear string? Because we need to recurse and we need to be able to handle generics, and we need to know that like recursively that U8 is for U8, that doesn't contain an actor. Therefore, this particular instance of array doesn't, and therefore there are no fields in this string class which contain it.
So I don't think string contains an array. I think it contains a pointer, but the same principle you just
you're right. But it's
the same principle. Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. Because we still need to know that it's a pointer to U8. And we need that recursive bit, right?
Well, although pointer, I think we have it as primitive right now. So we actually don't.
It's a struct. Yeah.
Oh, pointer is a struct. Sorry, it's a struct. Yeah. Not a primitive. So, but it has no fields. Uh-huh. So technically, we wouldn't need to know about generic reifications for the case of pointer, because it has no fields where it uses a.
So we could put in the initial logic of we would still need all of the recursive logic, but we could have the one where to do string, but we could do a first step would be to check all of the fields of an object, and if all of its fields are primitive, right, then it definitely doesn't contain an actor, right? If they're primitives or just primitives, right? It has fields, and none of those fields could contain anything else. And then in order to get string, it would need to have the recursive logic where it could apply the same thing, and then pointer U8 would be covered as, you know, well, pointer, just not even pointer U8, just pointer period is a struct that has no fields. Therefore, it can't contain actor references. Through the little recursive bit, we at least get string covered, right? I think that's what we'd be talking about as a minimal set, probably.
It could be something that complicates the picture a little bit further than what I had originally been picturing just came to mind. So I will raise that, I suppose. So we trace arrays in a special way. I believe. I'm looking for the gen trace code.
I wasn't aware that we traced arrays in a special way.
Well, we have to trace all the elm. I'm thinking not by remembering the specific code where this happens, but just thinking kind of logically here that we have to trace all of the elements of an array, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is not the same as tracing the fields. Because if we look at the fields of the array kind of in an agnostic way, what we see is two numbers and a pointer. And if we're in an agnostic way, we don't know. How do we handle that today? Because we don't know that that the two numbers and a pointer mean that we should use this one of the two numbers and take that as a number of elements to trace and trace that number of elements starting from that pointer location. That's not something that you can generically guess. That's not something you can kind of agnostically guess from within the compiler based on somebody having a class that has a pointer and two numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying makes sense, at least for the problem of it, if not the solution?
Like it causes a problem for our 1118 fix, yes.
And I'm trying to find it right now, the code where we trace an array.
Gen prim has trace underscore array underscore elements, which is okay. Called from gen prim array trace and is also called from gen prim array serialized trace. So we're really talking about gen prim array trace.
Yeah, gen prim array trace. So we already have a special case for array hard coded in the compiler at line 643 of gentype.c. We have if package equals built in and name equals array, then we use our special array trace.
Wait, it's gen type. Did you say gentype.c?
Yes, gentype.c, line
643. There that is right there.
So, yeah. Which is interesting because I think I had previously thought, just like as a thought experiment, if someone wanted to create their own array-like class that uses raw memory access, but it works similar to array, they could do so. But actually, tracing for them would be broken unless they had a way to supply a custom trace function.
So that's a separate problem.
It is a separate problem entirely, but it's an interesting. Anyway, go on.
So we would. What is array trace actually doing here? It's doing right the trace. So we do it takes the object and the pointer, and it's doing that array trace element, right? So the thing that I started from. Get the type argument for the array. This is used to generate the per element trace calls.
And it's also used to tell if you actually need to trace, right? If this is array U8, you may not need to trace.
I'm looking at gen trace, trace machine word, trace primitive. So this is interesting. Right, so so gen trace needed for the array. So for an initial version, we could do gen trace needed. For what gen trace needed does is also whether if it returns none. So wait, where is that? That's in trace truffle in our specific one. Where did I start from? Trace array elements 657, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can be setting we could be setting for array the might contain actor references to false here if we fall down to line 658, because anything where it's saying gen trace not where it doesn't say the trace is needed is one of those cases where it can't have an actor.
Correct. Yeah, that would be a subset of the cases that would be safe to not trace. Yeah. So, okay. So, after that excursion, I guess, so rewinding here, you know, you were the question you asked was like, does this, like, if we implement far enough to get string covered, like, isn't that already like the bulk of the logic that we need? I would say the main piece that we're excluding from needing to write is handling abstract types correctly. To me that is the trickiest part, because for an abstract type we need to look at like all of the reachable subtypes, all the types that are subtypes that could possibly be subsumed into that all the concrete types that could possibly be subsumed into the abstract type, and could any of those contain an actor? Whereas for the minimal version that covers string, we say, we see an abstract type. Oh, it's abstract. I have no idea. It might contain an actor.
So
you would still have the recursion. You would still need to handle type parameters, I think. Well, it's not strictly speaking for string, right? Because you could see that pointer has no fields. Basically, right. Anything that has no fields or all of its fields have no fields and are not actors. Anything that is not an actor and it has...
Well, not an actor, not an interface, not a trait.
Yes. Not an actor, and it's not abstract, and all of its fields also meet the criteria, then it meets the criteria. That's the recursion.
Yep. So I think that the last bit that's missing, the abstract types, that takes more time than anything else probably. But for in terms of putting in the machinery of this actual thing, I feel like doing this first bit covers the largest bit of the machinery to power it, I think is what I was saying, right?
Yeah, and so I think the question becomes like, are you willing to put in that amount of effort to put into place that machinery in the near term? And if not, we should probably merge anyway, despite the performance impact. And if so, if you or someone else is willing to put in that effort, to put in that machinery, then we should do it before merging, I would say.
What is near term count as? Realistically, I don't know. There's an outside chance I could get to it. I could start on it 2 weeks from now. There is a slightly higher chance I could start on it 3 weeks from now. But it's definitely not like a, it's just right around the corner. I want to get through the distributed cycle tracing stuff that I've been working on while, after I, you know, wanted to get this to, a point where we could talk about it, where
this is a blocker for that, right? We'd have to merge the 1118 fix before you can continue on the.
Yes, but I'm holding a lot of information, even though I've been documenting as much as I can for myself. I'm holding a lot of information in my head about the other one right now, and I don't want to leave it behind for an extended period of time.
Okay, well, given that, I mean, I think it makes sense to proceed with the correctness fix despite the performance problems, and just put a big old warning in the release notes about this release.
That sounds reasonable.
That, hey, you know, this is it fixed a critical safety issue, but it's also introduced major performance degradation significant performance degradation for some programs. And if you want to avoid the performance degradation, then wait for perhaps a future release that marks those as being resolved.
Yeah. I would say if anybody who has compiler experience, if they wanted to jump in and start to put any of the machinery in place, the branch is there, and I would certainly welcome that. You don't even have to complete it all. Like, I mean, Joe, if you had an hour sometime and wanted to put in just the stubs, right? Mm-hmm. Great, if I haven't got to the stubs, or, you know, any tiny little bits that people want to do, completely open to that. I don't feel like this is a thing that, like, you know, like, oh, this is mine, please don't step on anything, you know? I did the part which I am more uniquely qualified for than anybody else in GC.C. And if folks wanted to, you know, start dropping in even just stub stuff, which could help out. And then if I have like bits of time here and there, you know, I do some of those. It's great. If not, you know, then probably sometime over the Christmas break, I would be able to get to this.
Yeah. I would love to volunteer, although I feel like my time is being very much subsumed right now by lots of other things unrelated to any kind of programming. So I will contribute if I can, but I would also encourage others to reach out, and I can help explain things further if needed.
So here's what I think I propose as a plan, Joe, related to releasing this, all right, is that the current thing, I held back on doing the release until we discussed this for the one that has the cycle detector race condition fixes. I say we release that. Then we do another release for this, because that is an entirely separate set of crashy bugs. And if there's somebody who was willing to say, oh, I don't have a problem with X, right? I don't have a problem. I use the cycle detector, but I don't do anything where I send references to actors around, right? Then at least for the vast, for then that other fix would be good for them, right? And then this could be a follow-on, pretty much almost like, it's like I'll do the one release like tomorrow probably, but merge this, and then the release that would have this in it would happen like next week when I'm back from my trip to Texas. Right. And then they can be separated just a little. Okay. And so you could pick up one without the other.
Sounds good.
Okay.
All right. That has, we are significantly past the halfway mark, about 10 minutes left in the call. Anybody have special topics they want to raise, make sure we cover here today while we're here together? All right. Then we can continue with the auto-generated agenda. Let's look at pull request 4248 in the Pony C repo. Make the full program test runner able to run tests in a debugger. Gordon has been working on this. It looks like.
Yeah, I think the only one that's broken still is the M1 Mac, which I don't have. I think, does AWS have M1 hardware now?
I don't know if both Borja and Joe have
yes
machines.
Oh, okay. So yeah, if one of Borja or Joe can take a look at that, that'd be great.
There's an M1 channel in Zulip. I would definitely put a specific request to both of them in there so that. I mean, Joe's on this right now, but that way, that's where we've been communicating all such things to Borja. And, you know, part of the thing was when we got Borja that machine was that he agreed that, you know, he would work in, you know, within the realm of reasonability for his time looking at things like that if people asked him to.
Yeah, that sounds good.
This is kind of wild. What's going on there? I like just looking at the output in Cirrus CI. It's library not loaded. No such file. That's interesting. Okay. Yeah. Super odd. So, yeah. The changes here have been, I'm just looking through the changes here, mostly around the build process and a little bit in the runner. But there's no changes to like the compiler here, right? Yeah.
No, it's just the runner.
Okay. Really odd. Okay. Yeah, I will put this kind of as a higher priority than I was going to try to set aside some time for that other one that we were just talking about with Sean, but I'll put this as kind of a higher priority than that because I know I'm one of the two people that has the M1 for this purpose, so I can.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, no rush, but thanks.
Okay. Let's take a look at issue ticket 4259. Calling constructor and storing crashes Pony C.
I mean, it's.
Yeah, it needs investigation, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it's related to the checking auto recover logic, I think. Which
it certainly seems to be. That's, you know. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yes. I mean, this definitely feels like an edge thing. I'm not sure. This is not a normal way that somebody would go about doing this, you know? So. It would be nice to fix this because it could fix other things, but I look at it and go, this is a lower, if we were still putting priorities on things, I would call this a lower priority one.
Yeah. I'm just trying to see if there's anything immediately obvious about this that I could call out. So this is within a check auto recover new ref. This is cap fetch. It's trying to fetch from the receiver type. And then it's failing in the assertion. So cap fetch has an assertion. So it's neither nominal nor type param. Okay. It doesn't account for this case. I wonder if I use git blame to see who wrote this and when. I just want to get a sense of the history of that.
I think it was either you or Gordon.
I think it was me, maybe. This is call.c. Line 200. Okay. Yeah, so I think this is within the code that you added, Gordon. So it's trying to fetch the capability of the receiver type. And the receiver type is this, but the cap fetch method does not handle this gracefully. Cap fetch asserts unless you give it a TK nominal or a TK type param ref. So TK this type asserts. So the correct fix for this would be the interesting thing about this is that a constructor shouldn't be using this anyway. But this might also fail. I think this is not specific to constructors. Oh, it is specific because it's within check auto recover new ref. Okay. So wait, so check auto recover new ref only handles constructors, but is that true?
And the call in this particular case that causes the crash is actually a this create as compared to giving a specific class. Right. So if you look at the example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what I'm wondering is, I don't know, Gordon, if you have any memory of this, but the check auto recover new ref function, is this intended to only be for constructors?
Yeah.
Okay. So what's weird is that the receiver type shouldn't matter for a constructor, right? If I'm calling a constructor, I'm always going to get something. I don't understand why we're using the receiver type at all for a constructor.
Yeah, I'd have to take another look.
I joined a tiny bit late, Jason. Isn't that due to the fact that it's trying to auto recover to the destination cap, to the cap that it's ultimately going to be.
But why does the receiver of the constructor call matter? Because we're not actually using the receiver, we're just using the type of the receiver.
Right. So there shouldn't be a receiver at all.
Yeah, conceptually, like for a constructor, there's no receiver, although the receiver we use is like the it's some kind of reference to that type.
Yeah.
Sort
of a tag, at least until it's initialized.
But it shouldn't matter at all for the purpose of whether we can auto recover it.
Yeah.
I think what matters is the cap of the constructor.
Yeah, like I don't think you should be able to call this.create at all, right?
Yeah, you can.
Outside of the constructor? do you need a ref to, I mean, like, what if that assigns a let field?
But sorry, we just, I guess we have different understandings of what it means for this.create. To me, this.create means create a new instance. Don't execute the recover function on my current instance. It says create a new instance, but use the type of this.
Oh, okay.
So there's still no receiver value. It's like a newly allocated receiver value. Anyway.
So we don't need the check in line 223 at all?
I believe that's the case, although somewhere in here you need to check the cap of the constructor itself. Right? The constructor has a cap, so it's like new val or new ref, right? Is that what you were intending to check here?
I was just intending to check the parameters or the arguments.
Okay. Where does the check happen for? Okay. Yeah. So I think line 220. I think this check we're talking about could just be removed.
Okay.
We don't care about the receiver type.
Okay, I can take this one then and try that.
All right. I will assign. I will assign you to Discord. All right. And I will take the help wanted and discuss during sync, but leave bug and needs investigation.
Okay, and that concludes our call today. So thanks everyone for attending, and for those listening along to the recording later, we'll see you next week.